Welcome to the TEEP podcast, brought to you by SECO, the State Energy Conservation Office, and the University of Houston. I'm your host, Gary Gildert, and we will talk about industrial energy efficiency in 15 minutes or less. Jeff, tell us about the upcoming events.
So there are two big ones that I think are TEEP related, Gary, and the first one is happening next week with the Natural Gas Symposium, the future of natural gas. It's going to be in the Student Center South. And I know that you were part of a conversation with our vice president of the Division of Energy and Innovation and talking about the different aspects that are happening right now with natural gas, particularly with how are we going to power data centers in Texas? How are we going to, with all these, with AI needing to be powered, what makes sense, not just from the energy transition standpoint, but also just having enough power in a state that just keeps growing and growing?
And the interesting part of that is it doesn't seem directly related to energy efficiency, but you know what it is, because demand side has a lot to do with supply side as well.
So that's there are going to be a number of topics that are going to happen at that symposium. If you go to the UH Energy and Innovation website, still time to register. It is a free event, and that's going to be on Thursday the 9th. Also, it's at the Student Center South. There's a lot of construction. So check the website thoroughly for our best practices on where to park so you don't end up walking through a ditch.
Hint, East parking garage.
That's on the site. And also, Energy Day is coming up on the 18th.
Oh, excellent. That's going to be a great event. You know, I've done it for a number of years, even before I was associated with the University of Houston. It's a fun event. We have a great display set up for the kids, very interactive. Come on out. It's at Sam Houston Park on the 18th.
The podcast is launched, but there's also some other things that's happening with TEEP and getting information out, increasing the number of times that the newsletter is going to be sent this year.
Oh, absolutely. We've decided to expand it to once a month instead of just three times a year. It's fun. We've got a couple of interns to help me with that, too. So, but you'll hear more from them later. Okay, now for a recap of last month's events, we have Carla, who's going to talk about some things that she heard about at the SPTC event.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. So today I'm bringing you highlights from the first SPTC session. And trust me, there are some fascinating talks about energy efficiency, innovation, and real-world plant improvements that I really hope you'll enjoy. And so first off, is our talk about with the U.S. Department of Energy. It's Energy Intensive Industries Initiative. This program was actually created to boost energy efficiency across some of the most energy intensive industries in the U.S., not only to cut operating costs, but to also strengthen global competitiveness. In their talk, they started by mentioning five sectors that they targeted for the program, which are primary metals, iron, steel, and aluminum, chemicals, including carbon, hydrocarbon processing, food and beverage, forest products, and non-metallic minerals like cement, glass, and fertilizers. And really, together, all these subsectors account for over 50% of the U.S. industry's energy consumption. One thing to note is that in one of their two-year pilot technical assistance initiatives, they were able to engage with 45 specific sites, achieve over 4 trillion BTU of energy savings.
That's quite a bit. That's, you know, that's quite an accomplishment, even to get 45 different companies to engage with them.
Yeah, of course. And really, to put that in perspective, that's an average of over $2 million in cost savings per facility per year.
And that works.
Yeah, that's really incredible. They also talked about their current plans, which included hands-on training facility, wide system approaches, like pinch analysis, and really, the most exciting thing is that the DOE is still looking to extend its outreach. They sought feedback from attendees at the SBTC. They wanted to know what are the technology gaps in their industry and what are their needs for software tools and what other resource how can they help and how will that help them advance and accelerate their plant's economic competitiveness?
Yeah, this is really a fantastic program that they put together. I've talked to Paul and Jimmy about it. And, you know, they're really anxious to hear from people because they want to advance the program. This is there's a lot of free consulting available in there too. So this is a good thing.
Yeah, and if that interests you, keep an eye out and stick with our podcast, because we'll be talking a lot more about industrial efficiency innovations coming down the line.
Excellent. So what was the second presentation that you saw that day?
Pumping systems and the various approaches for identifying energy efficiency opportunities.
Yeah, pumping seems pretty mundane and simple, but did you learn something there?
Yeah, this one really got me thinking. Our speakers started out by pointing out that although there's an increasing urgency to reduce carbon emissions and through either carbon capture, hydrogen, electrification, and other long-term projects, we should also, or in their words, we must also explore short-term alternatives, because we can't stick around twiddling our thumbs waiting for a miracle to happen. Because although these projects offer potential, they require massive capital expenditures and lots of years to implement.
That is true. There's a lot of really interesting long-term initiatives out there. But, you know, getting back to the basics, looking at things that are a little bit easier to implement, a few studies and whatnot, I think these guys at Flowserve presented a few really interesting, basic, simple steps that we can take.
One of the big things that they found is about their approach is their approach was about looking at the entire flow loop, not just one piece of equipment. So from the suction source through the pump, across the control valves, all the way to the end user, really in every step, we have room for optimization.
I agree. A whole system approach makes a lot more sense. If you just look at the pump or just look at the valve, that's not going to be enough. And it's really refreshing to see that they're taking that whole system approach to things.
Some of these facilities are old, and we've come a long way, and they looked at cooling water optimization during seasonal changes. So in the summer, it's different from the winter, right?
Absolutely. When we design these plants, we design for a certain point, and then we add some margin to it and a little bit more margin, and then we don't operate at that point either. So I think their approach is really refreshing.
What they were emphasizing was on that they were going out there in the field, fixing, optimizing, and with that, they're reducing the energy required to run the stuff that's already there.
You know what? I think we're going to have a webinar just for them coming up in the near future.
Yeah.
They've already hinted they're open to that, and maybe this will really push them towards that as well.
There are easy wins right in front of us. They said that some customers often over-control their flow by using a BFD variable and a control valve at the same time, and this is really not necessary. It's wasting energy. Some other times, plants run two pumps when just one is plenty, simply because that's the way they've always done it. And
old habits are hard to die. Absolutely. So what was the third presentation in that session?
Yeah, so the last one, but certainly not the least, is the pinch analysis of a complex reboiler system.
You know, this is really rare to actually get a plant telling us about something that they've actually done for energy efficiency.
So the studies, they looked at two interconnected distillation columns, which was originally built in the 1960s, way before pinch analysis was even a concept. They identified that the heat demand and the heat source streams, and they built composite curves and realized that there were in a few violations of the golden rules of pinch analysis.
Yeah, that was actually an incredible presentation that they outlined it. And I don't think we can give it justice by just talking about it here. There's some great graphics that they had.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we did videotape this whole thing. So please come to our website and take a look at their presentation. I think it was fantastic. Next up is Hisham Habli. He found a really interesting article in the Chemical Processing magazine from Sean Otwell on data center cooling. Tell us a little bit more about that. What did you see?
So yeah, I found an interesting article from Sean Ottowell covering the growing demand of chemical usage makes things more efficient when it comes to cooling systems at a data center. Learning how chemical engineering principles apply in such a data-driven world was very interesting. You need chemical engineers at a data center. I thought it was mostly computer, software, people that deal with the actual data, and maybe some civil to, you know, provide structural support for these servers. But now with the growing demand of AI, it becomes increasingly important that it uses a lot of energy. Every time you send scripts, hey, do this, do that, it takes a lot of energy to do that, and especially when you're talking about companies that deal with, thousands or millions of data, every day. It takes a lot of energy, so you have to be able to cool that down. And the most efficient way is by using a single or a two-phase cooling system.
So why not just air cool like you do with your laptop?
So, the main thing with air cooling takes a lot of energy to be able to, blow enough air to even for that air to actually capture that heat. The difference between sitting in a bath, cold water, or versus having a fan blowing all over you is a big difference. You're going to feel a lot more cooled off, a lot more refreshed when you get in a nice cold bath or shower, hot tub, whatever, not cold hot tub, but, a pool or anything like that.
You're right. It should be obvious that cooling a 100-watt laptop is going to be a lot easier than a 1-kilowatt server.
The way that we can actually make these systems more efficient, you don't want to just use water. We understand the science of how things cool off and how things capture energy. So we can make other chemicals. And that's what two companies that were discussed in Sean Ottowell's post, were discussed. There's a company, Perstorp, who was noted to provide a single phase cooling fluid. And we also had Chemours, which had a two-phase cooling fluid. The difference between using each of those is big. It depends on your energy demand. If you want to use a single-phase cooling fluid, that's going to be for smaller amounts of energy being used. And it's also usually cheaper to maintain as opposed to doing the two-phase, but the two-phases, you use it for high energy demand. So you have a high energy demand, cooling that's required, you'll have to invest a little bit more money.
Okay,
in that.
So let's go back a little bit. So for you're saying single phase, so people are using these, I think they're a little bit exotic, but neat liquids that are not water for cooling.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the fluids in the single phase cooling system, you can either have it as an additive to water to essentially create a new azeotrope that has different properties, or you can also just use a whole new fluid entirely, but mostly it's cheaper to just have it as an additive to water, which is why we still use a lot of water to cool things down. But whenever you add these new chemicals to water, the reason why we want to do this, it makes it more efficient, is that in a single phase, you have pumps that obviously have to circulate. And the best way to increase that pump efficiency is to have it less viscous. Think of the difference between, getting a Frosty from Wendy's. You can't, drink that from a straw, but a soda, you absolutely can. It's much easier.
Okay, so lower viscosity, lower pressure drop, lower pump energy required. Sounds like a good thing to do. Now, this two-phase, this is boiling off the liquid to cause cooling?
Yeah, so the main difference, even in the properties that you look for, both of them, you want to have a lower viscosity, of course, just to have it move fluidly through the system. But in a two phase, you don't have pumps the same way that you have in a single phase. In a single phase, you have pumps, but in a two phase, you rely on pressure change that is involved whenever you absorb heat, and it circulates through heat exchangers and heats up and cools down, but it can absorb a lot more energy than a single phase.
Right. So Chemours has come out with their new line of fluorocarbons to do more efficient evaporative cooling. That sounds great.
Yeah. It's a growing industry. It's especially, with everything going on in the world right now with AI driving just about every industry.
Absolutely. Servicing data centers is big. And it's, it's great to see some good chemical engineering practice being applied to these new data centers.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a fantastic article to read. You know, I encourage you all to check in on the newsletter and read it for yourself.
As you said, the newsletter is online. I encourage people to come take a look at it. And that's it for our first episode of the TEEP podcast, brought to you through a grant from the Texas State Energy Conservation Office and the Media Lab here at the University of Houston. We're going to thank our awesome interns, Carla and Hisham. And I'm your host, Gary Gildert, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.